This Week in Radio Tech, episode 229, is brought to you by the Telos VX, multi-studio, multi-line talk show system. Meet the Telos VX talk show system at telos-systems.com. By Lavvo, maker of the new Crystal Clear virtual radio console. Crystal Clear is the radio console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. And by the Axia Rack and Desk, the big consoles for small places. Only Axia connects to so much, so easily. Hey, as engineers, we tend to worry about the studio and transmission end of radio broadcasting. Bob Crane, founder of C. Crane Company, took a different approach to broadcast quality. He and his engineers work on the receiving end, and it's making a positive difference. Bob joins Chris Tobin and me to let us in on the magic behind great radio reception. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. I'm delighted you're here. I'm another show that I'm really excited about and can't wait to talk to our guest. But even closer than our guest, let's say hi to Chris Tobin. Chris Tobin's in New York City, the best-dressed engineer in radio. Hey, Chris, good afternoon.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon. Yes, it's turning out to be still an overcast day, unfortunately, but the weather's not bad.
You're about to get a shot of colder weather. We had a big cold front coming through here on Friday in Nashville, and a glorious fall, sunny fall, cool day on Saturday. You might get that a day and a half later.
Actually, it was pretty cool last night and this morning. So they're calling for, I think, low 60s. So it's summer has passed, the fall has arrived, and it's going to be that crazy up and down weather for a couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Well, and before everyone thinks this is This Week in Climatology, it's actually This Week in Radio Tech, where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. Although this week, we're going pretty far afield and going to talk about the other end of what we do, the part that we use but we have little control over. And I'll get to that in just a second. Our sponsors for today's show are Lavvo and the Crystal Clear Audio Console, the virtual console that has a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Also, our show is being brought to you by the folks at Telos, my employer, delighted to have them along, and the VX voice over IP phone system, also by the folks at Axia, and the gorgeous, cute, little, just awesome desk mixing console, and its little brother, the Rack mixing console. We'll tell you about those as we go along. Now, let's without further ado, I've been just delighted. I never thought I'd have a chance to speak to this guy, and then one day it hit me. Well, why don't we just call him and see? So we actually wrote an email to the C. Crane Company, got a delightful email back from, I guess, their PR director, Jessica, and now we have on our show with us the founder and president of the C. Crane Company, that makes fabulous radios, Bob Crane. Hey, Bob, welcome in.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very impressed with your show, and it's a pleasure to be on, and thank you for having the courage to put me on.
I'm just impressed we've done so many episodes, mostly about the part of broadcasting that that your radio receive or your radios receive. Folks, I doubt there's very many people watching or listening to this podcast today that haven't heard of the C. Crane Company, and maybe you have or maybe you haven't ever bought one of their radios. And I want to get in with Bob about his business motivation, you know, about for making radios. These radios typically are not well in. This is my opinion, Bob. I want you to correct me as we go along here. They're not top of the line. They're not cheap junk, but they're really great performers, especially for the price. In other words, they're popular prices. Most everything that they have is well under $100, and they make some Wi-Fi radios that work great. And I just bought this little AM/FM weather radio, and it's just superb. It works. I was delighted when I got it. And Bob, why don't you just give us a little introduction to the C. Crane Company, and we'll over the next hour we'll get into your motivations and some technical aspects of how you make your radios and the features you design into them. So tell us what about C. Crane.
Well, your questions are very good, and that really is what I love to talk about, and it surprises me to see why we got in radio, but most of it was I've always been interested in reception. How do you make a radio get good reception? And mm-hmm. We moved to from San Francisco up to Fortuna, where we live now, and reception was terrible. So that took it to a head right away, and we got into AM reception because FM is you can't get more than a what, 100 miles or so, no matter what you do. Also, audio quality. Audio, to me, was substandard. It was hard to get a radio that had voice quality. I listened to talk radio quite a bit, and I had a hard time finding a radio that would sound good.
So before you got into running a company that manufactures and sells radios, what did you do before that? Anything related?
A little bit related, yeah. I've always been in radio. It just took me about, 35 years to wake up that maybe I could make a living at it. But I worked with some interesting electronic companies in the Bay Area where I grew up. We built stereo systems for a company in San Carlos, California. I guess when you look back, I made a Sony type Walkman in 1968 with, a little transistor. I cut out the resistors and put a set of Cost headphones on it, but that was pretty remarkable for its time. So it's just in the peripheral. I've been in radio a long time, even since I was a little kid.
Hey, Chris Tobin, before Bob sets us straight, Chris, maybe you could give me your thoughts about Sea Crane. You ever owned one? Or, I've heard ads for Sea Crane radios on late night radio, especially with Art Bell. Of course, Art's interested himself in people being able to pick up his show, and he was carried on lots and lots of 50-kilowatt AM stations at night. Chris, what's your take on Sea Crane before we get set straight?
I've had his stuff. Actually, I'm trying to remember. It was one of the little square tabletop radios. I have it somewhere at my mom's. Sea Crane, if you're a DXer, shortwave listener, ham operator, you should know Sea Crane. If you don't, then it's an embarrassment. No, I'm only kidding. If you've been an owner of the original GE Super Radio series or the GE Super Radios 2 and 3, you definitely would know Sea Crane. The products are great. They do exactly as he advertises. And, if you're someone who likes to listen in and pull in those signals on AM, that's the radio to use these days. There's nothing else out there, I think, that puts the focus on trying to get the reception you want. I could be wrong, but at least my experience with the products, that's what I get. And, if I can say that, the GE Super Radio set the standard back in the day many years ago, many, many years ago, and a lot of folks tried to duplicate it. It never happened. Only Sea Crane seems to be the closest to making it work. And, Bob's been at it, like you said, since the 1960s and change. So, with time and experience, that's the way it goes. But for AM reception, Bob, and even the FM, it's great. Yeah.
So, Bob, as a businessman, I guess probably your overriding desire is to make products that people want to buy. That's what we have to do, as any manufacturer. Doesn't do any good if we make the most fabulous thing in the world, nobody wants it. But aside from making things people want to buy, tell us about your motivation and ethic behind the radios.
That's something I don't talk about all the time, so I don't have it. I can't put it all in a few sentences, but I think talk radio is, we have too big of a country, and at one time and still to some degree, talk radio is the glue that keeps our country together. That's something that is not obvious to most people, but there's only Australia, Canada, and the United States love AM radio, and AM radio is still fairly strong. And, you bought up so that's why it's for our country that we started building these radios. I think it's important that people have access to even the internet can't offer immediate contact for millions of people like a national broadcast can. It's difficult, more difficult. The bandwidth is more troublesome. But to go on air now and broadcast nationwide, the president of the United States could do right now. And you can't do that with any other media. So there you go. Yeah. And also the entertainment value. But, I think that's mostly the motivation right there. And I think personally, radio to me is the best darn thing in the world. I haven't, you have to have food, shelter, and clothing, obviously. But past that, I'll take a radio any day.
Well, radio is it's both a lean, I guess they call it a lean back and a lean forward activity. For me, radio is usually lean back. I'm a broadcast station owner, so I tend to lean forward when the show segment is ending, like a talk show, and they're going into commercials. I want to make sure that my bumper runs correctly and my commercials start. So yes. Whenever those, you know, my business partner, Larry, and I, we're driving down the road, and you know, when Herman Cain is talking, the radio's turned down. But as soon as we hear his, you know, bumper music, or he says he's going into break, hey, turn the radio up. Make sure the spots are right.
Your motivations are different. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Help, we're off air.
I want to mention something about I had never owned a Sea Crane radio until I received this in the mail yesterday. I ordered it from Amazon, and it came in 2 days. And I was, you know, I was telling Jessica, your PR director, that I was so impressed. It feels it doesn't feel lightweight. It feels heavy enough to feel substantial. It's got this wonderful, and by this is one of those. This is not the only thing Sea Crane sells or makes. This is just one of many, many, many. But this is the one that I felt would meet my needs. And it's got this beautiful rubberized side around it, and that's just thoughtful because it's easy to hold. It's not going to slip out of your hand like my cell phone does. And the frosting on the top of the cake was this: I took the battery cover off in order to put the batteries in for the first time, and look what's inside the battery cover. The instructions for things that you wouldn't know intuitively. Now, you know, how to make the radio go from 9 kilohertz spacing to 10 kilohertz spacing, or how to set the alarm or set the clock or turn the beep on and off. I don't have to go to the manual now. If I, you know, I lose the manual, and 3 years from now I pick the radio up, I'll still know how to turn the beep back on. Or if I carry this to somewhere where they have 9 kilohertz spacing, I can do that, and I don't have to carry some paper or forget about that functionality. The other functions are, you know, you want to set a memory preset, you tune to the station you want, you push and hold the button like, you know, any other radio. But Bob, thank you for that kind of smart design.
Well, that's what we try to specialize in. We don't always do it. There are some other features in there, some secret Easter eggs you'll need to read up on. There's a way to turn off the display on a weak AM station so the LCD doesn't make noise. I think yep. It's the I think there's another one or two also like that that are built in.
Yeah, actually, I did see that display blanking, and I didn't have a chance to see if it changed about AM reception, but because I was listening to WSM, which is 50 kilowatts, 4 miles away from my house.
Yes. So, and I think you have a bandwidth. Yeah. You can alter the bandwidth a little bit, which is kind
yes,
of interesting.
You sure? Yeah. I tried that. I had it first on 2.5 kilohertz, and then I thought, oh, you can make it go to 4 kilohertz wide. So I did that, and I guess 4 kilohertz must be the 3 dB point because it sounded like more than 4 kilohertz to me.
Yeah, it just sounds a lot better, and you know we're trying to take advantage of the new chip technology that's available now with the filtering that's selectable.
So, if you would talk to Chris and me about how do you think about a design for a new radio? What when you think, if I built a radio that had this, how much of the design process are you involved with as your company, and how much are you working with, you know, contract manufacturers to help you with the design? Where does this begin?
Well, it's a chicken and the egg. And, you know, many years ago, we were more dependent on the manufacturers to help us with, you know, how things work. But now we do everything. We generally create most of the prototype. We do the design. We do all the, not the actual programming of the chip, but we do the flow chart of how the radio is going to work exactly. And so we're very involved, much more involved than you would think. And it takes an awful lot of effort by many people to over a long period of time to get it right. So it's a lot of fun doing it that way. But, what would you say? It's very rewarding when you get a radio right and you can send it out and people are happy. You get a very good feeling inside. Like the battery cover, for example. I've never seen that before, but why don't we put it on the battery cover? Okay. Anyway, this has been fun.
So how many different models? Boy, it must be in the dozens, if not 100. How many different models of radios are you making?
Well, it isn't that many, really. We come out with one or two a year is all we can do. But right now we have, maybe 15 or 20 radios that we manufacture. But each one takes a certain amount of updating. You know, our chips go sour, or, you know, they don't make them anymore. End of life is what they call it. And so we always have to upgrade chips on our radios. That's one thing. But it just takes an awful long time to make a radio. And it's quite a process. You know, we start with a customer input. And like I say, it's a chicken or egg. The customer may have an idea, but maybe the chip, the ability to make that is not here right now. So there's all kinds of different things to consider. And so we do a feasibility study. You know, what's on the market? Does this fit in? Is it offering a benefit? We don't always do it for money. We have a radio we have now that's been a wonderful experience called the EP, and it's an analog radio. I have one here I can put up on the camera.
Yeah,
I think I can grab it here. Oh, I got to take off my headset.
Okay. Yeah, actually, I just found it online, the EP-AM-FM Portable. It is an analog-tuned radio. Yeah,
so this is a it's a very simple radio, AM-FM. It has a – I think you can see that. It has a fine adjustment for AM.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Twin coil of ferrite, but the audio is surprisingly great on this one. The newest model that'll be coming out, I think, in the next month, has we've redesigned the front end, so most people would not be able to know they're on AM if they're listening to music. That's how good it is. So
I know
a lot
this
of
is
fun.
This EP, you know, I almost bought this EP radio, but I wanted, when I was choosing one a couple days ago, I wanted one that I could throw in my suitcase and carry when I travel. And the EP was just a little bit bigger than what I wanted, but I did like the fact that it has an external FM connector on it. How many portable radios do you find that have an external FM connector on them?
Not too many. That's really a break point. If you're going to put one on there, that's a good idea that the radio is a little bit better quality. Yeah,
and then you mentioned the dual ferrite AM. What does this do for you? Are there two AM antennas inside?
In essence, yes, but it's actually just one ferrite antenna, and we figured out that there's a north-south axis on the piece of ferrite. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, why don't we put two coils on there and then combine the signal into one? And it worked. So we got a 3 dB gain out of doing that process. So we get 3 dB better than any radio made today, which is not huge, but it's a lot radio-wise.
Ferrite antennas are directional anyway. Does this make it any more directional than it was before?
Yes.
I would guess so. It would make its lobes a little narrower, less fat.
I haven't seen the facts, but my ears tell me yes, because the radio is so sharp when you turn it. And there's a lot of times you can nullify noise over another type of radio, so that's would confirm that. Where you have a source of noise coming, you can just put it right to the pinpoint.
I got a couple questions coming up, and as usual, I'm doing all the yapping and haven't let Chris Tobin hardly get a word in edgewise. But we got to take a quick break here and tell you about our sponsor, the folks at Lavo. The folks at Lavo make this. They make a lot of audio consoles, but they make some big consoles, some smaller ones. They're getting into smaller consoles for the radio industry, but the one that they want you to know about is this really interesting crystal clear. It's called a virtual radio mixing console. Virtual because the thing that you use, that the disc jockey uses to mix his show, is not a console at all, but it's a PC with a multi-touch touchscreen. The software looks on the screen just like faders, just like buttons. And since it's all done in software, everything can be context sensitive. So if you have a mic source and you want to adjust the mic processing, you touch a button at the top of the fader, and the mic processing options show up. Whereas if it's something that wouldn't require mic processing, you don't get mic processing. You get other options. So it's context sensitive with regard to the type of input that you're using at that moment. In fact, the touchscreen handles up to 10 touches at the same time, so you could use all 10 fingers at the same time, but the point you'd probably more often be sliding two faders up or down or moving a fader and punching an on-off button at the same time. So the crystal clear console, some folks say it's faster and easier to use than traditional radio boards that have physical knobs and buttons. It has a flat menu structure, only two levels. The top level is the main screen, which has all these familiar controls. the option screens that you may wish to access are only one touch away from that top screen. So you can get completely familiar with all the functions in 10 or 15 minutes. There's a large clock and even a small event timer that are central to the display. It does smart auto mix. It does auto gain. So you bring a guest in the studio and you want to make sure that your fader is going to run in the right place. You have the speaker talk, you touch the auto gain button, and the gain for that channel is set, the input gain is set, so that now when you run the virtual fader up to its normal position, that talent is exactly at the right level. So you don't have to run talent way high or way low. It does support guests for talkback, so you can talk back to individual headphones and say, hey, Bob, we've got to wrap this up pretty soon. You know, you can do like that. There are 24 audio sources available in the console. These come to the DSP engine, which is a one-rack unit box that sits in a rack. All the audio inputs and outputs are right there in the back of that DSP engine. And then the control surface just connects over your network, over Ethernet. Connects to the same Ethernet switch that the DSP engine is connected to. You turn it on, you run the app, and it comes up, and there's your console right in front of you. It does have Program 1, Program 2, and record buses. Of course, it has cue, pre-fader level, metering, different scene presets. So if you have a morning show or an afternoon show that are different, you can do that. It does have AES EBU inputs and outputs, and optional Ravenna audio over IP interfacing, which is AES 67 compliant. So all the GPIO, of course, for your on-air lamps or to mute different things around the studio if you need to. I want you to check it out. If this sounds sexy to you, well, then please do. Go to lavo.com. That's L-A-W-O. German company. Great guys. They have a U.S. office. They have an office in Canada. These are just really superb business people and engineers. Lavo.com, L-A-W-O, and look for the Crystal Clear audio console. And we thank Lavo for their sponsorship of This Week in Radio Tech. We're talking to Bob Crane, founder of the C. Crane Company. Chris Tobin is our guest host on the show. Chris, what am I leaving out so far with regard to radio design that you want to ask Bob?
I don't think you've left anything out. One question I do have is the twin coil ferrite AM antenna signal booster that's on your website. Does that take advantage of the two coils in a ferrite rod?
That's correct, yeah. That's the official name, twin coil ferrite. And we have a utility patent on that that we got many years ago. It's still valid, I hope. And so it's an interesting little product. We sell it separately, too. Like you said, the twin coil ferrite for someone that just wants to see what they can do by boosting their signal. Also, for occasionally you have noise that's present locally, like in your bedroom or in your home. And you can get a 50-foot extension and put the antenna element away from the noise outside or in the house somewhere, like in a closet, and then run that the wire back to your radio and put a little ferrite stick on your radio. And then you can actually overpower. It is so powerful. You can overpower the localized noise that you find where your host radio is. Mm. So that's a real asset for someone who's a diehard that goes, I can't get good reception. Well, you can. It's the Ferrari of the AM world.
I see that, so, yeah. That twin coil. So this is an antenna all by itself, and then you run it into, I guess you have models of radios that that this connects to.
Any radio, it'll connect
to any
wire
gotcha.
System.
Okay.
Ferrite, you know, by proximity with the induction, with a little ferrite stick. Yeah. So it does just about everything. And it works on a 9-volt battery, too. So, again, with about 33 dB gain or something, it can be really remarkable. In fact, it would be difficult to surpass that even with a fairly big loop antenna.
Really? That, you know, there are broadcasters could use this. A lot of broadcasters have to pick up for the emergency activation system, the EAS. They have to, emergency alert system, they have to pick up an AM station, what's usually called an LP1 station, to monitor them. And this could really help in a broadcast environment to pick up a station that otherwise might be difficult.
That's on an AM signal then, the LP1?
Yeah, yeah. They could be either AM or FM, but there are a lot of them that are AMs.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So if they have to pick up a signal, then that can do it. Tune to that right away, and it's stable. AC power or backup power comes with it. So if the power's out, it'll still work.
You make a radio that has a wind up for a power source. How popular is that kind of radio? Are those all purchased by your Ted Nugent types or?
You know, that's an interesting experience. We had three earthquakes between 6.3 and 7.2 in 17 hours in 1992 here in Fortuna. And so that radio was made, the foundation for that radio was quite obvious when my kids had used all the flashlight batteries up until they're wonderful kids. And we couldn't hardly get anything work. And so and people don't know, unless they've been through a big earthquake like that, what it's really like, you know, where there's not a square foot without a glass shard and there's no light with your bare feet to go past them. So that radio was founded on that. We came out with a power pack originally with a solar panel, and then we put in a radio. And originally we went out over to South Africa. A company called Beijin in South Africa was making that. So we tried to contact them for 6 months to see if they'd be interested in working with us. And I finally realized they weren't probably getting back to us because the power was shut off at night in South Africa. And sure enough, when we sent them an email or tried to call them during their day, everything went a lot faster. And that radio is one of the more popular radios ever made, the Free Play and the Beijing, the original version. Yeah. And so that radio is tremendous. You know, before Y2K and all that, everybody remembers that. But, you know, that was very popular. I think quite a few of those were sold during that time period, with especially Art Bell, as you mentioned him.
Yeah, yeah. I've been collecting a few Wi-Fi radios. I don't have one of yours yet. I've got a few from the guys over at Grace. Tell me about the whole Wi-Fi radio industry. What do you think about that, and how are people ordinary folks deploying this, or is it still kind of a geeky thing?
You know, it's funny, but the young people are going to use their cell phones and think they have it. I don't need that. I have it on my cell phone, and they do. But you don't have a radio experience. You don't have audio worth a hoot. And as I say, you can't do dancing with dinner with a cell phone. It's just not going to work. It's very difficult to explore in the same way as you can with a Wi-Fi radio. So Wi-Fi radio will be perhaps a smaller segment, but it's here to stay. And I think it provides more enjoyment to me on the radio side than just as much as reaching out with when shortwave was hot and heavy. So there's It's remarkable. It's a truly remarkable experience. So we have you mentioned it. We have a new one that just came out today. I think it's plugged in. Hold on one second. This one's a new one that just came out. We just got in today. We've been working on it for 2 years. And it's based on TuneIn technology. So this is a Cherry version. Very handsome-looking radio, I believe. And, again, it's just fun to explore the different things that are available on Wi-Fi. But it hasn't been the most popular form in the world. But I can't really describe it. I don't know. What do you think?
I've had a couple of Wi-Fi radios that I was very disappointed in. They kept losing connection with my Wi-Fi and required reboots. And every time I would reboot it, there was a new software version available, and then I'd have to key in my Wi-Fi password, which is this long, over and over again. So it was a little irritating. This is one of them from another company, and finally it settled in, and things are okay. I actually do listen to a bunch of streaming radio on my cell phone. Usually it's my own stations, checking them. You know, they're a 7-hour drive away in Mississippi. I have two stations in American Samoa, so I check on them every now and then. But I'm streaming them and then Bluetooth to the car receiver. Come to think of it, here in our house we do have a couple rooms worth of Sonos. And that's pretty convenient. They have a beautiful app to control it, so it's easy to go pick a Pandora channel or a broadcast station, something you want there. What have you seen about the Wi-Fi, not the technology of 2.4 gig Wi-Fi, but about the user interface? How have you seen that improve over time? And you mentioned TuneIn technology. Is that an association with the TuneIn website to provide the selection of stations?
Yeah, we're always looking to improve that interface, but a lot of the features are built into the chip. So you have to really go down to the chip level to start changing things around, and you have to have like you can't call TuneIn and say, "Hey, can you change this programming for me?" Oh yeah.
Right.
Usually they don't want to do that, and it's so they have so much invested in to what they have. So there's other ways. You know, we have things we're working on in the background that are really intense, and unfortunately, the more we wait around, the better the technology to make it easier on what we finally come up with. So that's kind of a fascinating chicken and egg thing. But I think it's to the point where you know, we could start producing our own app, so to speak, that runs our own Wi-Fi radio, so that's pretty darn close right now. So it'll be another year or two. Hopefully, we'll have something out. But TuneIn, on the meantime, has all the podcasts available, has more extensive list available than some of the other services, and I think it's the first Wi-Fi radio with TuneIn.
Yes, something that I would love to see happen. Chris Tobin, maybe you can chime in on this subject. Some years ago, the founder of the company I work for, Telos, that would be Steve Church. Steve believed that sometime in the future, radio, or what we think of as radio now, is going to be customizable to the point that, let's say there is a German radio station that I really like, or actually there's a Latvian radio station I've visited that I really like, and they stream. But I do want to hear, let's say, CBS News either once an hour on my stream or when I push a button. Hey, I was away for the last 3 hours. I haven't heard the news lately. Let me just get a CBS News update. And I'd like to be able to easily and conveniently program my radio, maybe via my cell phone or some kind of app, that, you know, this is what I like, but I also like this and this. If I listen to Pandora, I'm not getting any news. I got to go get up and do something to go hear the latest news. And so I would love to have I realize it's got to be easy. It can't. Maybe there's a deep dive to an advanced section, but I'd love to be able to customize what I hear based on all the things that are out there, not just the stuff that's available on, say, one of my talk stations. But I want to hear, I want to customize that beyond what a radio station does and well beyond what, say, Pandora does. So maybe the music selection of Pandora – along with some local news and some national news when I want it. Any thoughts about that whole idea?
Well, I think you're right on the money. I think I have the same, or you're I think Chris was going to answer that, or
Chris, what do you think? Is that a crazy idea?
No, it's not a crazy idea. Actually, it's something that should have evolved probably 5 years ago with the way the internet has grown in multimedia, web media. No, I think that's a great idea, and there's no reason why it couldn't do it, but I think the content providers, broadcasters, are going to be the ones that are going to hamper it. So it will probably be a non-broadcast person or company that discovers a way to package it and get it to your phone or internet radio device or whatever it is, just as you pointed out.
Bob, what are your thoughts? And then I've got a comment about that.
I have, I have a dream, I guess would be a good way to describe it, that the radio will be everywhere and you will create what you want. And because we're pretty close to the next step in technology, where it'll be everywhere, and we'll get what we want when we want it. I've been dreaming about that too.
I'd love to have another button to push called Discovery. So,
oh yeah.
Usually I have on my iPod in the car, I've got 7,000 songs, but there are 400 of them that are my favorites, and I could listen to those same 400 songs probably till the day I die, but. Sometimes I'm in them. I wonder, there's got to be other artists that are like the Pretenders. And I'd like to hear somebody with a voice like Chrissy Hynde or, that whose music has a similar beat and rhythm, but is not the Pretenders. So I'd love to, like Pandora does, is categorize these things and say, let me hear some things that are like this artist, but not this artist, and have my radio go make arrangements for me to do that when I'm in the mood for it, not just all the time. And then the other thing I was going to say is it seems like if you want to customize your radio, I know I mentioned CBS News. We carry that as well as Fox News on one of our radio stations. And I I guess an app would have to have, okay, hey, do you want to hear news? Yes. How often? Once an hour. Does it have to be the top of the hour or close as possible? Close as possible. Which news source would you like? And now you've got radio news sources, Fox, I almost said Mutual. That dates me quite a bit. But the different network news sources, and I realize the number of those is probably dwindling now. And are you interested in the CBS Radio Network morning news that's 10 minutes long? Yeah, sure, I'd like that. Are you interested in hearing who's the the CBS commentator, Chris, that has a little commentary on CBS? Osgood, yes, Osgood. Would you like to hear Charles Osgood from time to time? Well, yes, I would. I'd like to be able to program that into an app, and now it's my customized radio station. And of course, if there's something I don't like, unlike broadcast radio, I don't have to sit through it. I can say, you know, this thing that Osgood is talking about today, I don't care about that. I hit a button and move on to the next thing. So it's my own playlist. That would be delightful.
Well, that sounds good. Well, that sounds like your studio control for a station when you do all your songs and match them all up, but you're going to pull your feed from somewhere else, something like that. This is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, there's another thing that I found that is kind of a secret, but it's not at all. And that is when you go tune in a station from a foreign country, and one of my particular favorites, not as far as a country, but the music that is provided through that country is Russia. Mm-hmm. And they have, it's 101RU is its hallmark. And they have 30% of the songs that the Beatles and the Rolling Stones have recorded that you've never heard.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
And you have, my favorite is 101RU Rock and Roll.
Okay.
And I haven't heard a song ever in my life after listening a week that I heard on American radio, but each song was incredibly good, well done, and by people that you've never heard of, or you wouldn't recognize the name, or you might recognize them. But I'm surprised, and this is the big secret of where you can find so much discovery and so much music. And I believe the only reason it's not here is because of the royalty structure that I'm sure that Russia doesn't pay. So it's kind of upsetting on that one. I don't feel good about. I'd rather have artists get paid, but for discovery, and it's really worth looking into.
I keep seeing 101RU show up in the list of stations when I use many of the different services out there, and I don't remember stopping on 101RU, so I certainly will, especially that rock and roll channel you just mentioned.
Yes, it's really remarkable.
We're talking to Bob Crane. He's the founder and president of the C. Crane Company. And if you've not heard of them, they make an incredible variety of consumer radios, from small pocket models like this to larger radios. They also make a lot of accessories to help with reception, various chargers, external antennas, things like that. Bob, next few minutes, we're going to get into more into the Wi-Fi radio and what you see coming down the line. I've got a question from someone on Twitter, and he asks about AM stereo compatible CQAM radios. Is there, aside from a few aficionados, is there any call for that?
You know, I think we're way past that in the technology market. And if you're good, the newest technology is Silicon Labs has done a remarkable job. They've already sold over 1 billion AM and FM radio chips on the world market. Mm-hmm. And that's remarkable. And their chip technology is so far above anything we've seen in the past 100 years that you have to be looking for them for a solution. They are the chips that we use on many of our radios now, and they have what's known as brick wall filters. And for these radio chips are inexpensive. So you really only need to set up, attach an antenna and an audio and a speaker, and you have a radio already done. But they've mastered the what they want to do with the shape of the bandwidth. And if we could convince them to do stereo, we would have a solution right off the bat. But it's going to be that solution, not going back to CQAM or some of the other stereo formats.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm really curious about HD radio and how your company feels about serving that market. And then also want to ask you about We'll take a break before we hit then, but let's stick to HD. Tell me about HD radio. Do you make any HD radios at this point?
We did experiment in the beginning. We had one of the first HD radios we sold. Our experience with it was not overwhelming. We also participated in the original, for a few years, NRSC meetings when they made the standard before they came out with the HD radio, so we're fairly familiar with it. And we don't feel that AM HD is viable for several reasons. It eliminates the long wave or the skywave skip, for which is very beneficial to 10% of the population in the United States that can't get radio elsewhere. And I think also, too, I think the distance, the actual distance for HD AM has not been proven, even at full power, to the extent that they would like it to work. And so I would be very careful as a station owner before committing expense on that, in that area. FM is a different story. FM has, you know, you can have multiple stations, which is going to take a long time for that to become popular, but it's still a viable system.
We're talking to Bob Crane of the Sea Crane Company, and I'm Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin on This Week in Radio Tech, episode 229. Coming up, I want to ask, in a few minutes, I want to ask Bob about other digital technologies that do work on AM, like DRM and DRM Plus, DAB technologies. So we'll get into that in just the next few minutes. Our show is brought to you in part by Telos and the Telos VX Broadcast Voice over IP system. If you go to telos-systems.com and just look for the VX talk show system, you'll find it. This is a system that uses natively voice over IP. It uses SIP, Session Initiation Protocol. That's a real standard for voice over IP. It uses SIP connections. Now, you're a broadcast station engineer. You're looking for a way to save money on your phone lines. Hey, I know a guy right here in Middle Tennessee has 10 request lines coming into his studios. $90 per line per month is the cost. He's spending $900 per month on POTS analog phone lines. Oh my goodness, this is expensive. And you can almost always save money using voice over IP lines, but you got to ask, well, what about the quality? What about the reliability? Well, it's gotten to the point, folks, where a lot of times your POTS lines are delivered to a building by DSL type of technology. If you buy a T1 circuit, in many places you have a new T1 circuit involved, what you get is essentially a DSL line with a T1 conversion box at the end of it. We're already going to this kind of technology all over the place. Voice over IP is in use by major corporations, by broadcasters everywhere. ABC Evening News with Diane Sawyer, although I think she's leaving. A lot of the calls that you hear on national talk shows are voice over IP. They're coming in voice over IP. Or they're coming into the facility by, say, a PRI circuit and getting converted to voice over IP. The point is the Telos VX system is ready for action with voice over IP, and it's completely scalable. You can start with one or two studios. You can go up to 15 or 20 studios. And got that taken care of? Okay. So it's serving broadcasters all over the place. Very flexible. You can attach 10 studios to it or two studios to it or anywhere in between. You can also attach a Telos VX system to, say, an Asterisk server and get all kinds of extra functionality. Have your callers to your talk show first listen to a legal disclaimer if you need to. Hey, your voice is going to be recorded. Your voice may be used in promotional competitions. If you want to go on the air with a disc jockey, press 1 now, or it'll send you to the control room. So there's all kinds of possibilities there. It's also possible to move studios now. So instead of having to unplug a bunch of phone lines and plug them into a patch bay to go to a different studio, just move to a different studio. Go to the Telos VSET controller and say, hey, I want to do, you know, the Bob show from Studio B today instead of Studio A. And the show, the whole show just moves over to the studio that you're in. Tons of advantages. The cost of the system is easily spread out over a few studios. And then the cost of your phone lines can go way, way down depending on, you know, what's important to you and how you want to bring your phone lines in. You can bring phone lines in over internet. You can bring phone lines in over a dedicated circuit from, say, XO Communications or Time Warner or Windstream or whoever your VoIP provider might be. So there's lots of possibilities. In fact, there are so many possibilities that I would just encourage you to have a conversation with a sales rep at Telos your favorite Telos dealer, or we'll put you in touch with Joe Talbot or Joe Mock from Telos. These guys really get the details of putting in voiceover IP systems, how to save you a ton of money and be very reliable. And the whole time, you're going to improve the quality of the phone callers. In fact, CNN's chief audio engineer said, our calls have never sounded this good. Quite a good recommendation from the audio guys at CNN. Check it out on the web, telos-systems.com. Look for the Telos VX broadcast voiceover IP system. Thanks, Telos, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, we're talking to Bob Crane. We're along here with Chris Tobin. And I want to get back into talking about these digital modes. We had a guest on recently, Bob Crane, who is a broadcast consulting engineer, and he thinks that the answer to AM, you know, could just well be blowing up the band and going all digital, whether it's all HD or whether it's all DRM, DRM plus. That remains to be seen. What do you think about the future of AM as we get more and more noise sources and dwindling revenues?
You know, that's an interesting question. And the noise sources are, of course, a major problem. But I think going to digital is very difficult because of the physical constraints of the bandwidth on AM. In other words, can you really get a good digital signal out and have it received properly? And DRM is another example that, you know, on the shortwave versions and stuff, that it wasn't that good of reception between Europe and America, which means that you're going to have problems with distance and everything. So there are no easy solutions that I've seen so far. And I think going forward with digital is I would hate to say it, but I think it will put a nail in the coffin of AM more than helping AM. So I think, you know, building receivers with different bandwidths that are brick wall, like similar to what's with Silicon Labs, and other solutions to be looked at that are much easier. There's no cost involved, and they're going to provide a much better signal and receive experience for the consumer.
I haven't kept up with it lately, but I know that in India, all India radio is transitioning to DRM on the AM band. And I was going to India a few times a year some years ago. I haven't lately. I hope to be going back actually in February to their big convention in Delhi. But I'm curious to see how that's going, how their plans of moving the AM band to DRM are in India. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, but I did go to Australia a couple of years ago, and I was shocked that their digital AM system was out. They had nothing to do with it, and it was, according to the people that I met, a failure. And they're back to analog AM again. That never was in our news over here for some unknown reason. But that was the way it was. They're done. They had a lot of problems with it.
Chris Tobin, you got some experience. You got some experience here, don't you, Chris?
With the digital, yeah. I have to agree with Bob. My experience with HD digital signals, both in AM and FM, the FM's working. I don't know. I still don't think it's best, but I suppose that it'll just continue the way it's going. But AM, if you just do the pure physics of it, Bob's right. The bandwidth's just not there. And I've listened to some of the digital stuff in Europe, and it's a tough one. I think I know when I was working at stations, we were doing AM stereo with the independent sideband or the Sequam, that there was several radio manufacturers that were experimenting with some nice technologies. Sprague was one of them, to try and filter and make some brick wall filtering. It wasn't exactly what Bob's talking about today because the technology's improved. But when you had the radio working the way it should, the AM reception in stereo mode was phenomenal, and you'd be hard-pressed to believe that it wasn't an AM station. So I think Bob's right. The approach we should be looking at as an industry is to take advantage of the technologies we have to improve on what's available rather than try to reinvent the wheel or think that we can do something digital. Because, you know, keep in mind, if you do digital communications, I'll just call it generic term, digital communications for the transmission, reception, decoding, whatever you want to call it, requires a lot more robustness than some of the analog versions. So unless you have the really stable environment, the bandwidth, conditions are ideal in the most situations, digital reception and decoding can be very difficult. Just look at the public safety industry. A lot of the digital implementations they've done there have failed, and they've had to go back to analog because they can't make it work. So they're narrow bandwidth devices. So we're not talking, 200 kilohertz here. Yeah, you're talking 6.25 kilohertz and something less than that, depending on where you are in the country. So I really believe for AM, he's right. I think if you continue forcing the digital approach, you're probably looking at a nail in the coffin, demise. And the best thing to do AM broadcasters could do is maximize what you have and push it.
I would be worried that even if there were really good, robust digital transmission solutions that worked well on the AM band, even if there were, there are so many other places that consumers can get audio that they want to hear. And if they're told, hey, your favorite radio station, let's say WLAC here in Nashville is going off the air, is switching to digital at some date. People are going to tune away, not tune back. Oh, to pick up them, yeah, I got to buy a digital radio. They're $59 or they're $159. And I can see the nail in the coffin, even if the technology was really appropriate and worked really well. And we're postulating that it doesn't work that well. So just the transition itself, no matter how good it is, might be a killer.
Well, yeah, it would have to be very compelling. You're right. You're absolutely right. It'd have to be very compelling for somebody to invest and make a change, considering the mature approach we've got with the current broadcast setup. I mean, look at FM HD. How many people are jumping on the ship for that and buying new radios for their FM stations? I don't know of anybody that's gone crazy doing that. They've bought cars that happen to have it in there. That's about it.
Bob, how about AM FM Wi-Fi radio? Are you making one of those yet, or is there still a divide between broadcast and Wi-Fi radios?
Well, we're working on that one too. We have, we always have irons in the fire and tricks up our sleeve. But yeah, there hasn't been too many AM Wi-Fi radios, but we think we have a solution for that because of the noise generated by the, the Wi-Fi radio is going to interfere with the AM. So we have a solution for that we've invented here. That's not an issue anymore, I don't believe. And so we're looking forward to having that type of radio out. And it'll be wonderful, but I think you're right. The selection between different formats is going to best you can do somehow.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting to have? And maybe this is a solution that you're already working on. Is I want to tune to an AM station, and it's just too noisy. I can't pick it up. But this radio I'm using already has an internet connection, and so it knows. Hey, he's in this location. Wants to listen to 84 WHAS in Louisville, and we're not picking that up over AM, so let's go see what's available if it's a stream. And it goes and makes a query, finds the stream, and plays you 84 WHAS stream from iHeartRadio or somebody.
I think that's a great solution, and that technology is here. And it could even be monitoring it in the background, every minute to make sure it has the signal strong or whatever it needs to do. So all that technology is here. So it's more of, the funds to do the software. Software is a very important part in radio, obviously. I'm sure it is in your broadcast arena. Yeah. And it is on the receiver side too. So to justify $100,000 or $200,000 in software costs, or in many cases, $1 or $2 million worth of software costs, you have to be very careful, because if your product doesn't fly, you don't have anything to resell at a discount.
Wow.
Yeah, you're done. So anyway,
as a broadcast manufacturer, and Chris Tobin has worked in this field as well, as a broadcast manufacturer, of course we never try to ship a product that doesn't have reliable software in it, but there are always software updates. I would think that in your position, you got to be it's got to make you almost not sleep at night to think that you could ship a product that that has a fatal flaw, a bug that's going to require the return of every single one you've ever sold. If you do an update, you got to make sure that update works and doesn't kill 10% of the the process of updating doesn't kill a bunch of the receivers that are out there. I'm talking about Wi-Fi radios. How do you get past that problem?
Well, you're right, and it is terrible. And I don't know of a new radio that comes out without some sort of a bug to begin with. But we have a very expensive and time-consuming process where we have usually 50 of the radios, like this new radio here. This is a CC Wi-Fi 2, was made, and we only got 50 of them made. And then we sent them out to employees and friends of our company to test and see what problems they had. Now, the radio is certainly not perfect, nor is any radio made perfect, but we did find some big problems that we had to solve before we released, and that's the only way to do it. And that time involved and the cost, you know, manufacturers hate to make 50 of one item. They'd rather make 50,000 of one item.
Yeah.
But and they want you to sign off and take possession as soon as you can. So, you know, you stall the. I think this one was stalled for about not almost a year on before we got it right, before we could release it. And we do that on all products now because the alternative is just not fun.
Gotcha. Oh, and yeah. You just mentioned this Wi-Fi 2. This does have FM and Wi-Fi. It just doesn't have AM because you mentioned the technical difficulty of incorporating AM into that environment.
Yes. So FM is easy because it's noise-free. AM is much more difficult. But like I say, we got it. But this is, I don't know, we have to take one step at a time with the radios and our experience. We're not we just don't have, you know, we have one or two engineers on board here at C-Crane, and we're a small company. And we stretch our limits every day, and we try to never get satisfied with what we're doing, that's for sure. But, you know, we have our limitations. It's not Apple here.
We have the same thing at our company. You know, how come we can't get this fixed? Well, you know, Apple would throw 1,000 engineers at that problem.
Yes.
We don't have 1,000.
That make 150,000 a year. Let's see. Let's add that up. Oh, my God.
Yeah. My goodness. So what do you see on the horizon for either C-Crane or companies that make receivers? I guess, you know, AM, FM, Wi-Fi, do you see anything that kind of is tickling your fancy or interest in the out years, 5 or 10 years down the road?
You know, it's funny, but the future of radio is actually quite good. It's still strong. AM radio in all its senior band moments is still very strong compared to television or perhaps FM as far as the amount that it's been reduced as far as listenership. It's been reduced less than other formats. So I think we're going to have to be satisfied with that. Again, I would look for, you know, I've written my letters to the FCC and stuff to try to get the bandwidth increased. But the technology is here, and to be satisfied with increasing the bandwidth of both the receiving and possibly narrowing or increasing that of the broadcast is something that we're going to be happy with to improve the band. I think it's historical how good it is, and I think, I don't know, AM listeners are not going to brag about that they listen to AM, but there's still a lot of people listening. And I think the economy has a bigger impact on radio than anything right now. So as the economy really improves, I think we'll see the industry have more advertising, which I'm sure that's what you're looking at, I'm sure, and sales of radios. But, you know, you have a whole young population that's going to be wants everything on their phone, too. So how that relates and how it's going to come out in the wash is anybody's guess at this point. But I also think one last item, too, is that, you know, there's a lot of debt in the radio industry. And if that can't be paid, and I'm going to suspect a lot of it can't be, then you're going to have a change in radio at that point. And you're not going to have the homogenization you have now. You're going to have new talent that's going to come on. You're going to have different stations that'll and opportunities for new talent. And hopefully talent that'll be more relevant to what a younger person would like to listen to. And I know I'd like to listen to it, but I think that'll be an interesting change coming up that I don't know how it's going to come out.
You're talking to an audience of broadcast engineers chiefly here on this podcast. Is there something that broadcasters are doing technically that just drives you nuts that some stations, please fix this. Is there something we could do better to make reception better?
I would keep in mind in the long term to look at how we could make the bandwidth part of our solution. In other words, if we had a bandwidth, say you had to go down to 2 or 3 kilohertz to get your signal out noise free, but then it was so powerful compared to your offending station, or maybe you could put your signal up 2 or 3 kilohertz above your midpoint and have the other offending station go below and have your receiver compensate automatically for the one you want to listen to. I think those are solutions that might work that are a lot less, they're not expensive, and they're a solution. So I would look for those type of solutions going forward to be aware of. But as far as a radio station, no, you guys are doing great. You're in the same boat as me and probably everybody. You there should be more of you, and you should get paid more, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Chris, so I've got one more big question or thing to bring up after our last spot break. What do you have to ask right now, Chris, if anything?
I was just curious as I was looking through the website, two things. One, I see that you have the radios with 2 meter reception, 2 meter amateur radio band reception, and then there's another one called Basecamp with an FRS radio built in. How did you come to do those, and what was, like, it was customer feedback, people asking, you just thought of an idea and then toss it out there and see if it would stick? I'm just curious.
Well, that one's pretty simple. The CC Radio 2E, that's the newest version, has a 2 meter ham. And the reason is when we had our earthquakes here in 92, that was one of the solutions, is the 2 meter ham was so important. In other words, we had people don't realize that there's only maybe in a small town or an average town, there might be 50 total policemen or people that can come out and look out and see what's going on. Well, there's a lot more ham radio operators. There might be 200-300. And so they end up doing most of the coordination efforts, like with the Red Cross and other things. The police are generally hopelessly overloaded. And so the 2 meter ham in some circumstances, and certainly not everywhere, but, you know, in the hurricanes or earthquakes, they come to the forefront. They're unsung heroes. And if you're in a situation where you don't know what's going on, the ham operators can, you know, you can make your radio, if you put it in dollar terms, this radio's worth 10 grand today because I know what's going on out there. And so I think that's why we put it in, again, for the disasters and to help with communication. The other FRS unit you talked about is one we've been reselling. We didn't make that one, and so it's not in our catalog this year. And I should say, this came out today too, the C-Crane catalog.
Ah.
A new one.
As soon as I register my radio, I'll be on your mailing list, I hope.
Okay, good.
Deal. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by, stay tuned. We got one more cool thing to cover. It's I think, the gem of the show. So that's coming up. Bob doesn't even know what I'm talking about yet. Actually, he'll recognize it. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Axia. And I want to tell you about a console that I personally own at my stations in American Samoa. It's the Axia Desk, D-E-S-Q console, and the Rack, the R-A-Q console. Actually, I own the Rack console. It's in the newsroom at our radio station in American Samoa, in Pongo Pongo, American Samoa. Monica Miller, our just crack news lady who's not afraid to ask the tough questions to the corrupt officials there. She does all her news on an Axia Rack console. The Rack and the Desk are small consoles. They easily fit in most workspaces. They're 6 faders apiece. The Desk console has linear faders and a single on-off button for each channel. The Rack console has rotary faders on it. It goes in a 19-inch rack. It's just a few rack spaces high. I think it may be about, 6 rack spaces tall or so. And either one of these, or actually both of them, connect to our Core 32 engine or to a Core 16 engine. You can actually connect 2 of these consoles to the same Core 16 engine if that suits you as far as the number of inputs and outputs available. That gets your cost per console really, really down. They're fully Axia compatible, live wire, audio over IP, you know, all the whole low latency thing and easy connectivity and talks to, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 different manufacturers, automation systems and outboard gear, even talks directly to, say, a Nautel transmitter that has a live wire jack built on the back of that, or an IDC satellite receiver with a live wire jack built right on the back of that, or, of course, almost any Omnia audio processor or Telos phone system plugs right in through the Ethernet network. But the rack and the desk are well, they're cute, diminutive, and yet they're sturdy. They're strong. They're very well built. They use these gorgeous organic LEDs, OLEDs, as the display mechanism for your meters, for your channel description, for what's going on in that channel, to show your confidence meter, for your pre-fader levels, for what's coming in, your talkback levels. I just go on and on about what's available. Oh, the rack and the desk, you know, like I said, they're the console surface. They plug into one of our little engines called the Core 16 or the Core 32. Both of these products, the Core 16, Core 32, they have mic inputs already on them. They have plenty of analog line inputs and even some AES EBU inputs and outputs. GPIO contact closures built right in the back of them. And here's something that's really cool. This will absolutely save you time and money. These little console engines have an Ethernet switch built right in on the back, already configured for live wire. Of course, they'll handle other traffic as well, but they're just designed to set right up for live wire. Some of the outputs, some of the ports on these feature power over Ethernet right on them. So if you've got a Telos phone system, like a Telos VX we talked about earlier, you can just plug the Telos VSET right into the Core 16 or Core 32. It provides power and all the network connectivity for that device. If you've got other devices that need power over Ethernet, or maybe PoE is their backup power source, like maybe you have an X node that uses shore power, you know, 110 volt AC, or PoE to power it, or both at the same time. All that's built into this great little Core 16, Core 32. Very affordable. These are on the order of, I believe, about $6,000 street price for one of these consoles. And again, full Axia compatibility. I want you to check them out on the web, axiaaudio.com/desk, D-E-S-Q, axiaaudio.com/desk. Great little consoles. And talk to one of your favorite Axia dealer about getting the price down by connecting two of these to a single core engine. There's a diagram at the bottom of the page there that I just described that shows how that is done. Really cool. All right, thanks to Axia for being a sponsor on This Week in Radio Tech. Now, we're talking to Bob Crane. We're just about done with the show, but I've got something I just want to give Bob big props on. It's one of his web pages. It is called C. Crane University. Bob, this is an incredible resource.
Well, thank you very much. There's a lot of people that have done a lot of work on that.
Man, if you want to know about, I mean, here are the questions that are answered in these great formats. A list of shortwave frequencies. NOAA Weather Radio, one of the best-kept secrets in the world. An interview with radio maverick Michael Harrison. What will I hear on the 2-meter band? How to set up a wireless network. So you've got articles in here in C. Crane University that cover from simple stuff to rather complicated stuff. What gave you the impetus to help your customers and even those who aren't your customers with this great information?
Oh, just saving time. How about that?
Yeah.
When we get questions from customers and they tend to fall into the same group, then it's really worth your effort to take the time to do it right and do a little research and make sure you have all the right answers there. So it's pretty simple. Like we enjoy helping a blind person too when they need to learn one of our new products. So we help them out. But after a while, we record it, and then they can get it for free by clicking on the web. And it ends up being, I would say, less time, and that's a selfish reason. But the joy you have from helping someone and the effect it has for their lives sometimes is a huge reward. So thank you very much for those kind words.
What? Here, improving AM reception in an office building. That's people every day people can use that. I love this one. Who invented radio? Was it Tesla or who exactly was it?
you know, I forgot to tell you about our friend Dan, too. And you said, how do we make a radio that's durable and reliable? We have Dan Van Hoy, who lives in Hong Kong and travels into China all the time. And he's a guy that when we started, that's there. Anytime there's a hint of a production, he's over there. What's going on? How's it going? Let's check one out. So that's the other big secret of our success, too. It's just hard work from Dan over there.
Cool. Chris Tobin, last comments from you, buddy. What's up?
Oh, no, no. I was just looking at the university and, you know, Connell Rad and other things like you mentioned with the who invented radio and first broadcast. It's cool stuff. It's definitely something to look out.
Interview with Art Bell and the whole article on slinky antennas. I got to read that one. It's going to be interesting. This is great work. Do you ever allow people to people link to these articles? I'd like to post a couple of these on Facebook from time to time. This is some good information.
Sure, I think anybody is welcome to link. We do appreciate a little thing, you know, from C. Crane. That's fine, and then that's all we ask. And
they'll be going to your website to read the article itself. So
that's fine. Either way is fine. Also, too, I want to take this opportunity to say it's been very interesting to learn more about your show, Twert, and it's hopefully some kind of fascinating or learning experience talking to me, but it certainly has been for me listening to your show, and it's just so interesting. We're both in the same business,
but at different ends of the transmission chain.
Anyway, I thought I'd mention that.
Hey, Bob, thank you so much for appearing on our show, taking an hour and a half out of your day and spending it with us. I know I appreciate it, and I hope our listeners and viewers do, too.
Same here. I hope so, too. It's been fantastic to be on air with you, and I hope you have a – let's see how radio goes, right?
if some new technology comes along or a big improvement, give us a shout or I'll call you, and we'll get you back on to talk about it.
That sounds fantastic.
Chris Tobin, thank you for taking time out of your busy day, too, to be with us. I sure appreciate you.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I look forward to it every week.
Next week, our show is going to be done from somewhere. I'll be in Albany, New York. Long story. that's where I'll be to do the show. So, Chris, it's going to be a war story show. Maybe you can round up some war stories for us between now and then.
Sure. And before I forget, remember we had Charlie Toner on with the SNMP?
Yes, actually, I wasn't. You hosted that show. I wasn't on that show.
Well, I had the opportunity to go to the Central Canada Broadcast Engineering Conference this past week, and Charlie and I hooked up. And let me just say that Charlie and tree trekking, that's a story that we'll have to have in a later netcast. It will make you laugh and cry. But also, I have to congratulate Wally Lennox, because he's a favorite viewer of Twert. Yep. And Wally is the director of radio engineering at Bell Media. He received the Lifetime Achievement Award at CCBE this week.
Really?
Yes.
And, I've met Wally.
Yes, and those in Canada who work in the broadcast industry know Wally very well, and he's been a really great mentor for a lot of folks, and he's been a great person to talk with over the years, so I just thought it'd be nice to put that out there. So it was a fun time at the grand dinner they have, and made the announcement, and I don't think there was anyone in the room. About 250 people attended. And I don't think there was anyone in the room who didn't believe that Charlie was well suited for that award.
Good deal. Good to hear that. Yeah, Wally. Good to hear that. Hey, Chris, will you be in Verona next week at the SBE meeting?
I was going to try and make Verona, but I cannot. I have a few other things that day. So, but I will be able to make the show, but Verona, no.
We'll be at AES together, though, next week. Unfortunately, I couldn't arrange to get this show done from Los Angeles. If I had a transporter, I could have made it happen. But airlines being what they are, it can't happen. So we'll do the show next week. Actually, the funny thing is, I may very well be doing the show next week from the Albany airport, from Millionaire, the fixed base operator, the people that sell private plane fuel at the airport. That's one possibility. Either there or some radio studio. So we'll get it figured out and be on the air from there.
Okay. All right. I'll just be ready with my roving kit.
Good. All right. Thanks, everybody. Our sponsors, Lavo and the Crystal Clear Console, Telos and the VX VoIP-based phone system. It's just awesome. And the Axia rack and desk consoles. I own one myself. I love it. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.